Somebody is going to be very, very happy because of this episode, sincerely. Somebody is going to be extremely ecstatic. A lot of you are going to be extremely ecstatic. Why? Because finally, Daniel is starting to talk about relationship, love, and all that kind of nonsense. But anyway, disclaimer. Everything that you're about to hear is mostly commentary from this one guy, Daniel, and sometimes some other people. He's not claiming to be an expert on anything. He most likely watched a one-hour YouTube video, read a book somewhere that he downloaded illegally, and then, you know, said, you know what, I like these ideas. I'm going to share with you. What do you all think? This is not professional. I am not a professional. Any advice given here should be taken with a grain of salt in your rice and 2 cubes of sugar in your tea. But think about them, really. Think about them, listen to them, you know, ruminate, balance on it, and let me know how it goes for you. Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, good whatever time of the day you're listening to this. And welcome to another episode of the Volatile Times with Daniel podcast. And yep, as usual, I'm going to be your one and only host, Daniel Briggs Adisa, on this here podcast. If you don't know who I am a young man who loves the Lord, who loves thinking, who loves anything he loves, and is just here to be your fat teacher today. So yes, I hope you are seated with your notepad and everything, because today's episode is going to be a long one. It's definitely going to be a long one. So yeah, you want to maybe like chill, suss out the vibe, get yourself a cup of beverage, you know, bottle of water is nice. Have you drunk water today? You know, and just, yeah, get ready to get into this concept of romanticism and everything with me as we dive into how we love and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, welcome once again. If this is your first time, welcome, welcome, welcome. Today, we're going to be talking about the major idea that drives how we look at love in our society. So today I'm going to be doing something a little bit different from how I usually do things. I'm going to be focusing on one particular content for this episode and most likely other episodes that are to come after it. The content I'm talking about is a YouTube video by somebody named Alain de Botton. Alain de Botton is a Swiss British born philosopher kind of thing, you know, and he's actually one of those people who publicly pushes for the addition of philosophy into everybody's everyday life. You understand, like, he started this school of life thingy, this channel on YouTube, where he tries to bring philosophy into daily applications, you know, things that involve our daily lives, things like friendships, how you love, how you speak, what you value, all those kind of things like that. Sometimes some of the ideas in the School of Life, the YouTube channel, by the way, seems somehow, I'll not lie, but hey, nobody is supposed to be doing the thinking for you. You are supposed to be doing the thinking. Anyway, I recommend the channel School of Life. Be careful though, sometimes some of the ideas can get pretty sus. But with that out of the way, I'm going to be examining this video by Alain de Botton, where he's talking about love and the concept of romanticism. And the reason why he's giving this talk, which he's giving the talk at the Sydney Opera House, which is in Australia, if I remember correctly. And he's talking about this concept mostly because he just wrote a book at that point in time. I think that was back in 2016. The title of the book, it's a novel, I think, is The Course of Love. The Course of Love. You know, and he starts out saying something about where we get the ideas of love from and how our idea of love mostly comes from the things we read, the books we've read, the novels we've read, the songs we've listened to, the poems we've read, and, you know, maybe or listened to, etc., etc. All those kind of stuff, they shape the narratives of how we look at the concept of love and how we approach it in life. And most of us like to think, like, you know, we are these independent thinkers, we aren't really influenced by other people's thoughts, ideas, by music and all those kind of stuff. We like to think that we are independent thinkers in the sense of we came up with our own philosophies and values by deep thinking, you know, like this sense of originality, the concept of uniqueness, you know, we like to think like that, but he makes the argument that most of us, basically all of us, are not like that. Our values, our morals, how we see life is mostly informed by the things we've read, the music we've listened to, the things we've been exposed to. And I think many people will agree that, you know, you are a combination of lived experiences. And if this is true, which I think mostly is, it means that how we approach love is not uniquely our own. We have incorporated so many other things into it, and from there we have made a decision or definition of how love is supposed to be, how we are supposed to perceive it, how we are supposed to receive and give it, you know, and different aspects of that. He quotes somebody named LaRoche saying something along the lines of, there are some people who would never have fallen in love if they hadn't heard there was such a thing as falling in love, you know. And while this might seem a little extreme, it kind of also seems true. Most of the time, I remember the part in the Bible, in Romans, I think, Romans 5, that I was talking about, there was no sin or no acknowledgement of sin until the law was given. So sometimes you don't know something is something unless or until you're told it is that something. Now you can make different arguments about whether that's true or not, but hey, I'm just giving commentary on the video, right? Let's move on. Okay, so when we love, we are taking a lot of cues from the outside world. We honor certain emotions, we admit certain emotions or act on certain emotions because we are told that, oh, these are the valid emotions to act on, these are the emotions that you should be feeling and that you should be directing to other people and wishing to receive. And then we kind of suppress or ignore other emotions or other realities of ourselves because we think or we have been told in some form or manner that these emotions are the undesirable emotions. And this isn't just about relationships or the concept of love. This boils down to everything. What we think is polite, what we think is common sense, you know, all those kind of things. We are acknowledging these things because we have received the societal induction, the societal knowledge that, yes, this is the accepted thing and this one is not accepted. He says firmly that we live in a time of romanticism, an age where the concept of romanticism is everywhere. It is prominent in our society. And you might be wondering, what the heck is romanticism? I will do my best to give you a simple definition of it. There are various definitions of it, both in dictionary and art societies and everything, with some other applications, but most of them basically have the same essence to them, I think. So I'm going to be giving you one definition that mostly goes in line with the content of today's episode, and also I feel kind of embodies most of the founding concepts of romanticism. Are you okay with that? Okay, let's move on. So romanticism is an intellectual movement that began in the mid to late 18th century, the 1800s, right? And he says, even if you've never read a romantic novel before, or heard a poem, or listened to a love song before, you are still influenced. Why? Because we all are. Now, a good definition of romanticism, in my opinion, is a state of being romantic or affectionate in a sentimental way, a general exaltation of emotions over reason and of the senses over intellect. From that, we gain the good, sweet, sweet knowledge that romanticism focuses mainly on the emotions aspect of things, on the feeling, the senses that a person has, and the things they perceive through those senses, rather than intellectual, logical reasoning. You know, thereabouts, you know, feelings over emotion kind of stuff. Yeah. So he kind of gives that as the basis for where he's going from with romanticism, and from there he now moves on to detailing down some basic core ideas of romanticism and the things, you know, that it kind of teaches. And so let's go straight into the first one, which I love the first one already. Like, I really love this guy, the way he started, I was like, yeah, bam, and let's go. Problematic ideas of romanticism. Number one, soulmates. Yes, the idea of the soulmate, the one person who is perfect for you, the one person that if this person just comes into your life, everything will fit into place. You just know it. The idea of soulmate is not a relatively old idea. I mean, it's the 18th century, the 1800s. It does not so long ago. Many of us like to think of soulmates in the form of, oh, this is a concept that has always been, but actually it's not. And even some Christians believe this, even though there's no biblical standing for a soulmate. I've heard this so many times among Christian circles, the concept of a soulmate, and how, you know, there's just this one person that God has made to be here on earth for you, which technically I think is an arrogant thing. Sincerely, I think it's an arrogant thing, you know, because he goes and explains it this way. He says, this is the idea that for everyone there is most definitely a soulmate. That one person that you haven't found yet and you should be trying your best to find, because when you find them, everything will just become well, will just become all right. Your soul, we join with their soul, you become one. Every empty, confused and lonely part of you will be redeemed. Loneliness will be banished. The feeling of worthlessness and getting agonized or agitated at the mysteries of being alive, everything will fade into the background, and then we'll have, you know, a pina colada in our hands singing Hakuna Matata for the rest of our lives. You know, it's like, I don't know. I still don't understand why people believe in the concept of soulmates, because for me, whenever I think of soulmates, I'm like, how does that work? What if I don't find the person? If it is just one person and then there are 8 billion people in the world, how much of a difficulty is it going to be to find that one person? And I'm not just saying this as a, kinika. It's like, how does it work? We also make this assumption when it comes to soulmates that our soulmate will be our exact age. I mean, what if I'm 25 and my soulmate is just getting born? And then I'll have to wait till I'm almost 50 before they are even in their 20s. What's going on? Also, there's another thing, I think an assumption we make when it comes to soulmates, at least maybe not a direct established assumption, maybe more like a hope, which is that we will definitely find this person. You understand? Like, we already started with the assumption of surety, like we are sure that there is a soulmate out there. You understand? So now we are also sure that we'll find them. Which, how do we find them? How do we find them? Well, that is the second problem with romanticism. The way you are going to find that perfect person for you is by instinct. Hallelujah, somebody. Okay, yes, by instinct. Let me explain. The instinct is this. Somewhere along the way in life, you feel something, a sort of special feeling, if you will. And it's kind of like an excitement, and you cannot even tell when it will happen or where it will hit you, but it surely will happen. And when this happens, you are going to spot somebody, and without necessarily knowing a goddamn thing about them, you just know that this person is your soulmate. This person is the perfect person for your life. This person is the one that the good Lord Almighty has designed to be on earth just for you guys to hook up together. I mean, sure, I added some things there, you know, to kind of like for dramatic effect and stuff. But yeah, it's kind of like, it's crazy, you understand? I've always had this belief since my secondary school days that there is no such thing as love at first sight, because for me, it just did not make sense. How do you just automatically fall in love with somebody who you know absolutely nothing about? Like, you are just basically going to see their face, you know, and then that's it. You know, like, really, that's it. And we see this a lot. We see this a lot in most of our media. I remember so many Disney movies, the prince is just going to see the girl. Then it's like, yes, father, I have found the one. And the king is also going to be like, or the queen mother is going to come and be like, dear Charles. I don't know why I said Charles. Why did I say Charles, for Christ's sake? Anyway, moving on. Dear Charles, Have you found the one? Where is my queen? And Charles is going to be like, I shall fetch her, Queen Mother. I shall bring home the love of my life. Actually, I'm playing. Wait. No, those stories never go like that. But anyway, most of the time, you meet that special somebody, your heart does bing, 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 bing. And then you're like, ah, I think I like this guy. No, I think I love this guy. Oh my guys, I don't fall for these people. And it's like, how does that happen? You guys just met. You guys probably had like one or two interactions, like y'all just met. You calm down, you know. And the thing with the instinct that romanticism says we find our soulmate by is that there's no questioning that instinct. Remember the definition I gave at the beginning, where, you know, romanticism is an exaltation of emotion over reason, right? Exactly the same thing here. Your heart does bing-bing because you saw somebody, probably somebody fine, or maybe they did something that caught your attention, and then for some reason, based on unconscious values, you are immediately attracted, pushed towards this person. You have a strong sense of fascination or longing for this person immediately. And you know, we tell these things as love at first sight, you know, crush, all these kind of things. And we don't question these feelings, we just accept them. People just tell us to accept them, we accept them. When we tell people, most people just accept them. Most people don't ask questions. Who is this guy? How did you know this? Well, how did you come to the conclusion that, okay, yes, this is how you should feel about this person? We never ask these questions most of the time. We just go with the flow. God, our generation is vibes. Our generation is super vibes. Romanticism, basically, the concept of, you know, falling in love at first sight, going with this instinct, this emotion, is very, very what's on the surface level kind of operation, because there is nothing substantial you know about the person that should promote immense or exciting feelings of longing or want for the other person, which most of the time we term to be love. There is nothing like that in existence. Sure, it might be, but we just automatically make the assumption. Now, realize the first assumption is there is that perfect person for us, right? Second assumption then comes and says we'll definitely find this person. And then third assumption is that we basically know when we find this person. Right now, I want you to do something. Close your eyes. In fact, you don't need to close your eyes. Memory is plenty. Try to remember the last time you watched a movie or heard somebody, you know, talk about love, and then the question, you know, how do you know you're in love? How do you find somebody, you know, how do you know you're in love? And the answer is always, you just know. You know, you just know. Okay, moving on. And then we go to the next assumption, which is that after you found this person, you are going to live happily ever after. Again, Disney is the biggest representation of romanticism in our lifetime. I am just saying, you know, don't tell anybody that I said that. Okay, so anyway, I don't know why I did that. That was just left on. Let's turn back, right? So the concept of happily ever after is that it is the conclusion, or don't let me say conclusion. I'll say it's the conclusion. It's the conclusion of the soulmate scam, that there's this one person who is meant for you. You know, you find this one person. How do you find this one person? By instinct. And then when you find this one person, because they are just perfect for you, they are your soulmate after all, your souls will immediately merge. There will be a correction, you understand, a completion. You become whole. And because that will happen, you shall live happily ever after. No wonder many people are looking for boyfriends and girlfriends, husband and wife, to make them happy nowadays. It's like romanticism teaches us that until we find that person, we will never truly be happy in our life. And in a way, I see this in a lot of representation, both non-religious and religious. Take for example, back to my Disney examples. take, I think Sleeping Beauty, for instance. Sleeping Beauty has this curse, and then there's only this one person. Aha! Yes, I identified what I was trying to look for. The concept of true love's kiss that Disney has introduced us to and poisoned us with. Yes, if in case you're not catching on, even though I love Disney movies, I have a problem with the narratives. Anyway, moving on. You know, the concept of true love's kiss that Disney uses, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, whatever, whatever, I can't really remember. Beauty and the Beast, you understand that when you realize you are the perfect one for this person, your love shall somehow transform them, shall somehow correct them, shall somehow tame the beast and correct that person and heal that person, make them whole, redeem them. And then you two shall merge to become one entity in soul, in body, and in mind, always in sync with each other, happily ever after, kind of nonsense. But Alain de Botton says, strangely or strikingly, many romantics tend to die young, like quite young. And we see in most of the stories, Romeo and Juliet, that many people love Romeo and Juliet for some reason. I've always been scared of that story. It's like, yeah, Jesus, Lord. But this is not about Romeo and Juliet. This is not about Romeo and Juliet. Daniel, this is not about Romeo and Juliet. Move on. Okay, so, you know, Romeo and Juliet, the whole, you know, we just, there's this thing about romanticism's approach to love and happily ever after and death or tragedy, you understand, that kind of stuff, is that the special encounter happens, they fall in love, tragedy occurs at some point, and then one of them die or both of them die. In one way, the love is everlasting, it's happy ever after, and happily ever after usually translates towards death. You know, Z-World is a very big example of this. You know, all you Sadat fans, Mehek fans, you know, these two people find each other, maybe are not immediately attracted to each other, or maybe they are, but it manifests in some weird way, and then over time they start to realize how connected they are, how perfect they are for each other, and then from then on they fall in love. They have moments of bliss, moments of enjoyment, of passion, of really good passion. And then, tragedy happens. Auntie comes in, Gujraj comes in, somebody comes in, and then starts to bring chaos into their palace of love, and then they ended up dying, and then they reincarnate. You know, this whole concept of star-crossed lovers, all this kind of nonsense. I'm throwing a lot of things in here. But, you know, it's just, I'm just trying to remind us of all these concepts and how it permeates in everything. Even in Christendom, we sort of believe marriage will make us whole. You understand? Like, many Christians believe marriage will make them whole. Like, oh, when I finally get married, the problems I have with lust are going to be, you know, gone, banished. Tufia. I don't know any other sound I can keep on making. You know, like, there's sort of that belief that everything will just go poof, and then everything's going to be happily ever after. You know, the way we approach marriage is like, you know, we're gonna feel good, we're gonna love each other so, so much, and then it's just going to work out, right? But then tragedy happens, and then the love dies at some point, but you always be in their heart. You always be in their heart. Like, these things are everywhere in our society. Many of us think this way, or have thought this way, or still have elements of this kind of thinking in how we see life. You know, like, I'm very sure you are noticing it now, how you, what you want in a spouse, what you want in a partner, the kind of things you admire, why you love drama series so much and everything, you know, all those kind of stuff. Why you enjoy Mehek's story, even though it is ridiculous, but you just really love love stories. You just love love, right? Yeah, romanticism. Okay, before I move on, I know we are almost reaching the 30-minute mark. This episode might go up to 40 minutes, most likely. So I just want to remind you now, please like this episode. God damn it, like this episode, subscribe to the podcast, share the podcast, you understand? Take a screenshot right now and post it on your status or something, because you know you are most likely having a good time. If you are here to now, you're most likely having a good time, right? Okay, let's go on. Okay, so the next assumption, which this is something that this is something that I have spoken about with a couple of friends and just a couple of people in general of different ages. Love stories make it look like as if people are jobless. Yeah, you know, that's another assumption of romanticism or core idea of romanticism, that people are jobless and therefore because we have nothing better to do with our time, we can wholly, fully, without any distractions, without any breaks or anything like that, we can wholly devote ourselves to love, to falling in love and chasing love and finding love, which is the problem of a lot of you nowadays. A lot of you are just, all you think about is love. You shall want to be in a relationship, yo, marriage, yo, couple goals, oh, relationship goals. You are just thinking about relationships. What is wrong with you? Better your life. Okay, I'm done railing on people. Single brother here, single brother. You know, just sharing some bitterness of single though. Okay, but the thing about romanticism is, you know, the ideas of what is romantic. You know, we envision always going on dinner dates, walking around in the park, always spending time with each other. In fact, we are almost always together. You understand? We barely ever have time away from each other. We barely ever do anything apart. Everything we do together, Netflix and chill every night, even though I just came back from work and really I feel like a truck hits me from here to Badagry and I really just need to rest. We are tired together, you know, like that's the concept. Like, you find this person and then you chase after them with all your heart, with all your might, and apparently with almost every time of daylight for every day of your life until you marry them. Yeah, basically romanticism thinks we are basically all jobless. We are all jobless. We have absolutely nothing better to do with our time, and we can as well just spend all that time being in love and chasing love, you know, which leads to the next and final core assumption of romanticism. And this one is actually quite prevalent in everywhere in our society. I know I said all of them is prevalent because romanticism is actually quite embedded in how we approach love. And over consequent episodes, I'll be discussing more concepts he mentioned in the video, which I'll definitely be linking down below in the description of this episode and every episode where that video or the content of the video features. The last assumption, core assumption, is that sex is the greatest act of love. So this concept of sex and relationships and love is something that many of us haven't understood for a while. You know, like, I still had a discussion with my younger sister sometime in July about why is it that many people view sex, like having sex in a relationship, as something that needs to be done in a relationship outside marriage. Like, if you are dating each other, y'all should be having sex, y'all should be smashing, you understand? Like, why won't you smash? Don't you guys love each other? And we see this a lot in movies. You see a lot of movies, Nigerian movies, they will do it in the way of, don't you love me? Don't you love me? And you see some teen dramas or just some movies where the lady is worried that, you know, the guy is not making any move on her. Like, doesn't he find her interesting enough? Doesn't he like her enough? Doesn't he love her? You know, you see, it's so everywhere. It's so everywhere, sincerely. We see it in almost any type of movie, even an action movie. If the actor and did I just say actor? Ah, that's so Nigerian. Anyway, if the protagonist and the love interest, you know, meet up and then start developing their relationship that was born out of the instinct of feelings that they had for each other, and they have this awkward, very, very foolish encounters, but somehow it deepens the attraction of love towards each other. They end up smashing, they end up having sex one way or the other. It's almost every movie. We like each other, we love each other, we gonna smash. You got the condoms, we gonna smash. Right now, let's show our love. It's like, it's always seen as that climatic, maximum, ultimate expression of love. In fact, the way romanticism expresses it is that it's the most sincere expression of your feelings for another person. An almost divine expression of care for another person. You know, that is how sex is being portrayed with the idea of romanticism. Alain de Botton kind of goes further and explains that the major drawback to this is the fact that it turns adultery into a tragedy, like a catastrophe. And I mean, you might want to be like, can you consult something? Is it now that adultery just became a problem? Actually, no. People have been adulterous. Human beings have been committing adulterous for all of, maybe not all of, but most of human history, at least most of the history that we still know of is recorded. And even those before that, we know, you know, people were smashing out of marriage. Let's not lie. We read the Bible. We know. Okay, let me come back. Okay, anyway, so people have been adulterous, you understand? So if adultery is, or just the act of sex, whether you're married or unmarried, is the ultimate expression of love, then that means people have been falling in love so hard, so fast, so much over history. So nowadays, it's now kind of like, it's so normal for you to have had sex already, because whenever you meet somebody and it's like you say you're a virgin, most likely they laugh at you. Nowadays, people tend to laugh very, very visibly at other people for having sexual purity. Maybe not purity in the sense of total purity, but like sexual preservation, let me put it that way. We tend to kind of like not value that or not see that as something desirable in our communities, as not something not desirable in our day and time, that we even kind of make the assumption that maybe the person has never been in love with somebody, maybe the person has never had the opportunity to express or never had somebody to express their love, you understand, which basically means they never had the opportunity to fuck, you know, to do-de-do. I like that, do-de-do. I'm going to be using that from now on. You know, anytime I'm about to mention anything that talks about sex and talks about actual sex, I'm just going to do-de-do. Basically, sex is the only way you can truly show you love me. There is no other better way. Even though Disney movies don't show us smashing scenes, it is always kind of implied that at the end of the movie, some smashing is going to happen. And we usually know that some smashing happens because in part two, they have a child. Okay, just leave me alone. Don't mind me. But yeah, those are the core assumptions. The core assumptions kind of go on a journey, you know. Romanticism teaches us that we all have that one perfect person that God has designed for us, and we will know that perfect person by this special, powerful, exciting feeling. By that feeling, we are going to identify that person, and when that person comes into our life, we are going to be made whole, we are going to be made complete, and that we are going to live happily ever after. The completion shall be everlasting. All our problems, all the damaged part of us and everything is just going to be gone, chike, just going to be gone, just banished into the abyss. I played too much. Yes, and in the chasing or in the finding of this person, we are to spend the majority of our time devoted to the concept of love and finding that perfect love. We are supposed to devote our time to it. We are supposed to do. We are supposed to be. We are supposed to be on and on and on this thing, you know. I think it's one of the reasons why it's strange when we hear somebody is single and the person didn't just suffer a heartbreak or something. We automatically think everybody should be in a relationship. Everybody should desire a relationship. Like, in fact, when you don't experience this special emotion, you tend to start thinking something is wrong with you. You tend to start thinking, you know, this is embarrassing. You know, you need to find somebody. So you then get desperate, or you start faking the feeling of love. And so you're with so many people, you're pressured. You don't want this person to realize, oh, you are not the perfect one for them. But at the same time, you want somebody at least till you find that perfect person, which is why y'all are gonna be in relationships and then still be looking at options. What the hell is that? How can you be in a relationship with somebody and still be considering options? Is it juju or madness? Anyway, it's because of these things, you know. And then when we are in relationship with somebody, even though we have no love for this person, or maybe it's just a kind of sense of attraction, we will fake the love, the experience, and then we will mostly fake it by providing the greatest expression of love, which is sex. So we start judging how much you love us by whether you allow us to smash or not, whether you allow us to do the do. Yeah, so that is how these co-assumptions, you know, come into our lives, how they permeate everywhere in our lives. And you can spend time thinking of these things, how you've been in past relationships, how you are in your current relationship, how you look at the concept of relationships and how other people treat it, and how these ideas kind of show forth in people's approaches to love. You know, it's actually a very fun thing to do when you know these things, and then you start observing how other people are talking about relationships, other people are approaching relationships, you know, the specialness and the sacredness we give to the concept of having a partner, you know, all those kind of things. When you notice them, it's kind of like, yeah, it's fun to notice. And here's the thing, the ideas of romanticism are beautiful. They look beautiful, they look exciting, they look empowering. We live through them, you understand? So it is going to be very, very naive to just be like, nah, I don't really think like this. Nah, I don't really subscribe to any of this. The thing is, in some way or another, maybe not in totality, but in some way or another, we are affected by these principles, by these core assumptions of how love is supposed to be, what we are supposed to expect from love, what we are supposed to experience. You know, the idea of romanticism is everywhere, sincerely. And Alain de Botton explains that he believes it is one of the biggest reasons why we have problems with maintaining a lasting, long-term relationship, right? And that if we are going to experience lasting, good, healthy, long-term relationships, we're going to have to do away with some of these ideas, you know, to abandon the assumptions and question the emotions and the principles behind romanticism, which we are going to be looking into next episode, which is in 2 weeks. Thank you guys for coming this far. You know, I hope this introduction to the whole idea of romanticism, the core assumptions or beliefs of romanticism, what it tells us love should be like, what we should expect from love or our partners and stuff like that, I hope it kind of like is an eye-opener. Some of you might have been familiar with some of these ideas, but you know, I mean, a refresher is never a bad thing. Chicken. So thank you so much for hanging on to this point. I kind of said it was going to be a long one, and yeah, it is a long one. I think this is going to be one of my longest episodes, and I make no promises that subsequent ones will not be long. Also, I mean, the video is 1 hour 30 minutes, guys. 1 hour 30 minutes, you know, and I feel like expounding and introducing every single idea he spoke about in that 1 hour lecture to you guys, you know. So yeah, it's going to take us a while. We're going to be going through this steadily, you know. There's no rush. We want better love lives. Everybody wants better love lives. We want to be better lovers. We want to have better lovers. We want a much more fulfilled concept of love, and a much more fulfilling approach to relationships, which we all deserve. But hey, we gotta work for it. So we start from learning what exactly has us fucked up. So anyway, Thank you so much for listening up to this point. I really, really appreciate you. Thank you for doing so. Remember to like, remember to subscribe, remember to share. Share on your status. Always, you can just screenshot the episode art, maybe go to Instagram, screenshot, you know, the promotional art, and just put on your status on Facebook, Snapchat, everywhere. Provide people the link, share, you know, that kind of thing, because I think this is good content, right? You are here because you think it's good content. So share good content. Don't be selfish. Okay. Bye-bye, everybody. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, I will be talking about the problems that romanticism has introduced into our life. But until then, remember to follow on social media. Instagram is @VolatileWithDaniel. Twitter is @DanielBriggs. There's a link down in the description if you want to give feedback. You understand, there's a Google form there. Give feedback, give this, etc., etc., etc. And yeah, I'll see you guys later.